Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. John Masaryk, non-communist foreign minister of Czechoslovakia and the son of the founder of the republic, has died by his own hand, or so say the communists. In this country, in the New Hampshire primary, Governor Dewey has taken the first round, grabbed 6 of the 8 delegates. Details from Chick Morris a bit later in the program. We'll get into the news in just a moment, but first, your announcer.
Young woman, if you would like a career of opportunity, wear the white cap of the nurse. Not only is it a symbol of a proud profession, but it marks the person who wears it as one who is being well rewarded for her efforts. You see, now as never before, there is a greater demand for nurses. Consequently, there are many fine opportunities in such diversified fields as child health service, with airlines, in government practice, in private service, and in research. If you'd like to know more, just ask your local hospital how you may study to become a nurse and equip yourself for a fine career. Yes, once you put on that white cap, you'll learn that nursing is a proud profession. And now back to the NBC newsroom.
John G. Masaryk, the non-communist foreign minister of Czechoslovakia, died by his own hand this morning in Prague. At least the official announcement says Masaryk took his own life. It says he leaped from the second floor of the Foreign Office. When told of this, the former chief of the Czech army, General Prikala, who is now in London and leader of a movement to resist the communists, replied with these words, "Suicide? It is possible." The very definite inference in the general's response was that Masaryk may or may not have died by his own hand. When the communists are running the show, an official suicide of one who opposes them is not necessarily that at all. It is as likely to be a case of murder. That General Prikala accepted the announcement with some reserve seemed obvious. In Prague, it is very difficult to get anything but the barest announcement from official sources. Details are mostly lacking. General Prikala said in London that he and his aides had been alarmed by reports that Masaryk had been given his choice of getting out of the government or of joining the Social Democrats, the party closest to the communists in the new regime. Masaryk's latest public appearance was last Sunday. Photographs show he looked badly then. John Masaryk was a world figure. He was the son of the founder and first president of modern Czechoslovakia, Thomas G. Masaryk. During the war, he became the foreign minister to the Czech government in exile. That was in 1940. 5 years later, when his country was freed from the Nazis, he returned there and has continued in the same post, that of foreign minister, ever since. During the war, his broadcasts to the Czech people from exile were a source of comfort to them. He was no stranger in the United States, having come here first in 1907 and remained for 6 years. He was 61, fluent in languages, and a black Homburg hat was his trademark. Soon after the recent communist coup, there were rumors Masaryk had been imprisoned, but they were not confirmed. Last September, Masaryk was considered as a possibility for the presidency of the UN General Assembly, and he was head of the Czech delegation. Questioned then about communistic advances, he summed up what he believed when he said, "I feel constitutional, democratic, and parliamentary processes must be maintained in Czechoslovakia." Well, a man like that was certain to get in the way of the communist dictators. Elsewhere on the international scene, in every possible way, the British government is hammering home to its people today the economic plight of the nation. The press is using black headlines and charts. And this afternoon at 4:15 British time, the hour at which BBC has its peak audience, Sir Stafford Cripps will take to the air to explain in a sort of fireside chat the problems that beset England. He'll no doubt explain that without Marshall Plan aid, England may have mass unemployment and hunger. In the United States, politics holds the national spotlight following the primary in New Hampshire. So let's get a first-hand report by way of Chick Morris at station WBZ, Boston.
The nation's political headline this morning is Dewey wins in Granite State, Stassen blitzed. Nearly complete returns from New Hampshire's first-in-the-country primary, about 90% of the vote, give the New York governor an apparently unbeatable 6-2 victory over his rival Republican presidential aspirant Harold Stassen of Minnesota. Dewey supporters so far hold the first 3 places among the 4 delegates at large to be elected. A Dewey man also leads in the 1st Congressional District, where 2 delegates are being chosen. And in the 2nd District, both 1st and 2nd places are held firmly by delegates pledged to Dewey. Much of the city vote still remains to be tabulated, but sufficient trend leaves no question as to the Dewey sweep, which was strong in both rural and urban areas. Although these returns admittedly are important, they are not in the least bit conclusive. Rather, they serve as a reflection of Republican voter sentiment, throwing some light on the shape of things to come. The next few weeks may tell the story as the tempo of pre-convention campaigning quickens. With a New Hampshire victory tucked securely under his belt, Dewey can be expected to start his Republican presidential campaign in real earnest. Next stop on the primary train, Wisconsin. The date, April 6th. This is Chick Morris in Boston.
And now let's hear from Lee Feed in Washington.
Washington, which takes a cold, clinical attitude toward all politics, figures the New Hampshire primary results a standoff. Governor Dewey, the favorite, came through. Harold Stassen, the challenger, got just as many delegates as he could expect. So Washington professionals' first thought is that nothing at all has been settled in this first round, and they're looking to the next round in Wisconsin next month, when Stassen will have to deliver, and so will the newest candidate, General MacArthur. Republican Senator Brewster says Wisconsin will settle it one way or the other for MacArthur, and that he'll have to make a pretty good showing there to have much chance. There's a lurking and probably well-founded suspicion here that if General MacArthur does well in Wisconsin, his backers on the Hill will find some way to get him over here to testify on one thing or another and so show himself to the voters. Otherwise, this morning, the House Foreign Affairs Committee closes public hearings on the Marshall Plan and settles down to writing a bill. The deadline now is to get it through Congress by the 10th of April to give all psychological help possible to anti-communists in the Italian elections 8 days later. This morning, the House Un-American Activities Committee, fortified by a whopping new $200,000 expense allowance, says there'll be hearings on Dr. Condon, but not soon. And this morning, the butter and margarine battlers are still at it. A Southern California medical professor says the butter, fat, and milk is wonderful stuff for calves, but for children, no better than margarine, maybe not as good. It's the city representatives and soybean and cottonseed men against the dairy state men who want to keep that 10-cent-a-pound federal tax on colored margarine. Representative Andreessen of Minnesota says he'd as soon eat lard as margarine. Congressman Mitchell of Indiana, a soybean state, says milkmen are only trying to spread confusion. And the worst offenders of all are fellow Republicans. Also, that butter has no monopoly on the color yellow. Representative Reed Murray of Wisconsin, toting in plaster of Paris models of cows and cheeses and butter and milk bottles, says the margarine arguments are as full of holes as a piece of Wisconsin Swiss cheese. He says they'll never replace the old-fashioned cow. This is Lee Feed in Washington.
Let's hear up-to-the-minute details regarding General MacArthur and the presidential candidacy. Come in, George Thomas Folster in Tokyo.
Here in Tokyo today, it's been pretty quiet around General MacArthur's headquarters, everything considered. Ever since yesterday, when General MacArthur came out and said that he would run for president if the people of America insisted, we have been on sort of a lukewarm griddle out here in Tokyo. No, not a hot one. And by that I mean speculation humming all around us. Nothing hot, just lukewarm. And earlier today, MacArthur's headquarters issued I won't talk statement. The Supreme Commander is standing pat on his original statement, in which he said he would not shirk his responsibilities if he is called by the American people. He is sitting tight, will remain so, and will let his sponsors back home campaign for him. If nominated, MacArthur will return home to accept the nomination, resign from the Army, and run for president, is my opinion. Of course, no Army officer on duty out here will give you a straight answer on how he feels. As far as the GIs are concerned, well, you know how the average soldier is. He is anti-officer, and in direct ratio to the officer's rank. But then again, he's a voter, too. The Japanese, well, they seem to be split. Those who feel MacArthur could do more for them if he stayed in Japan, and those who think he could do more as president. One Japanese said to me, I wish General MacArthur would stay in Japan. Back there in Washington, he won't be able to see all the small things.
That was George Thomas Folster in Tokyo, and now we go quickly to another part of the world to hear from Henry Cassidy in Brussels.
It's become clear today that the Union of Western Europe being formed in Brussels will not be able to bring all 16 Marshall Plan nations into its alliance. Sweden, even before being invited, has reaffirmed its traditional neutrality and in effect has refused to join the Organization for Mutual Defense. Delegates to the five-power conference making the alliance read with attention this morning a statement by Swedish Foreign Minister Unben. It said Sweden will not let itself be drawn into a great power bloc and will make no commitments on one side or the other. The statement is all the more significant because Sweden was to be one of the first nations approached for membership in the alliance during the Marshall Plan conference in Paris next week. And the Swedish lead is likely to be followed by Norway and Denmark. Without the Scandinavian countries, diplomats fear the Western Union will lose much of its effectiveness as a barrier to communism and to Russian expansion. But there is still hope that Italy and some of the other Marshall Plan nations will join the lineup. A British delegate going into the five-power conference this morning said his country and France plan to open the pact to other countries. The smaller partners, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg, apparently put more reliance in a tight Western alliance, but the great powers feel they should extend their organization wherever they can. This is Henry Cassidy in Brussels.
Hopscotching the nation, former Wisconsin Governor Philip La Follette predicts General MacArthur will not be the GOP presidential pick unless that oft-mentioned deadlock between Taft and Dewey becomes a reality. The way it's shaping up, there will be so many possibilities in such an event, there may be a deadlock between them. Already Vandenberg, Stassen, and now MacArthur are mentioned prominently as good possibilities if Taft and Dewey cancel each other out. The head of the National Farmers Union, James Patton, says the election of progressive congressmen is more important than the presidential choice. He says the present Congress is the worst in the history of the nation. Farmers Union delegates in convention in Denver heard his remarks and then heard rail labor leader A.F. Whitney ask the farmers to join labor at the polls. Overnight in Philadelphia, speaking at a forum conducted by the Philadelphia Bulletin, CIO labor leader Walter Reuther took a verbal whack at both Congress and industry, blaming both for the high cost of living. He said their failure to roll back prices had forced unions to ask for more money. Meanwhile, a strike vote is to be taken by 10,000 CIO oil workers who are seeking a 30-cent-an-hour wage boost. In San Francisco, Major General Louis B. Hershey continues to direct the activities of selective service officers who are studying improved methods of handling a manpower draft in any emergency that might arise. Thus, selective service as a possible requirement for future use comes back into the news. More news in a moment. Now, your announcer.
It exists only to serve. It lives up to tradition best by searching out new means of service, new trails to blaze, new techniques to improve the welfare of our communities, our nation, and the world. Service to all mankind is the very keystone of the 1948 campaign fund drive of the American Red Cross, in which a goal of $75 million has been set. A considerable portion of this amount will be spent in giving aid to veterans. That means the veteran in the hospital will be well taken care of. It also means the Red Cross Claim Service will do its part in assisting servicemen in filing claims against the proper authorities. The American Red Cross, in addition, maintains a home service program which provides assistance to veterans and their families. So won't you give generously to the American Red Cross and help the veteran? Remember, he helped you when you needed it. Again, back to the newsroom.
An atomic scientist, Dr. F.H. Spedding, has an optimistic note in the news this morning. At Iowa State College, where he is head of the Atomic Research Institute, Dr. Spedding says the peacetime applications of atomic energy are going to make its wartime use seem unimportant. When you pause and think of the great impact of the bomb on the science of war, Dr. Spedding's statement assumes considerable and encouraging proportions. News note from New England, and it isn't about primaries. There's 3 feet of snow on the ground at Williamsburg, Massachusetts, and cold lingers over many parts of the nation. But Williamsburg residents think spring can't be far distant. The sap has started to run in the sugar maples. Maybe winter is going to end one of these days after all. That's the story, folks. John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.